Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great show tonight. A lot of crazy things going on. We are being hit today and I guess tomorrow as well with a major solar storm coming in. So I know a lot of people are feeling a little out of sorts, and that just may be the reason why. There's a few other things. We're having a lot of crazy UFO activity up here on the mountain as well. So things are really picking up, and this world I don't think can get much crazier. But anyway, we've got a great show. We've got a little computer glitch here. Let me fix this really quick. But we've got Jeff Grupp on our show, and he's the host of Zen Flower Radio and founder of the Planned Antimatter Institute. He's also a writer and researcher, speaker, and is often a guest on other cutting edge radio shows. His areas of specialization include anthropological, philosophical issues, Buddhism and quantum mechanics, Buddhist philosophy in India, metaphysics, philosophy of physics, space and time, and political philosophy. So this sounds like an eight-hour show, actually, but we'll try to compress it into 1 hour. So anyway, Jeff, are you with us?
I am. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Oh, welcome to the show. There's so many places we could go with this, and basically what I always tell people when I have guests on the show, I say, consider it your show, and so wherever you wish to take us is up to you, and I'd love to just kind of talk a little bit about, you know, basically what's going on the planet. You know, people keep asking me my take on it, and I like to hear other people's take as well.
I'm really optimistic about the future. In the past, I've had times of being rather afraid of, you know, because there's a lot of crazy stuff going on.
Uh-huh.
I mean, even just the price of silver, I mean, is great that it's going up for the investors, but it's, you know, it's freaky, everything going on. So, you know, I've had a lot of times of being quite afraid about the future, but in the last few years I've become incredibly optimistic. And the main reason for that is because I think that from my experience and my studies, numerology has largely become one of my favorite topics, and I become sort of an amateur expert, to put it in a contradictory way, in numerology. And the reason is because if you study numerology, you just read a book of any sort on it. I mean, there's, unlike astrology, there's a lot of good books out there. And the numerology is incredibly empirical. Unbelievably accurate. It's just shocking. And if what numerologists will tell you is that if you notice the different epochs and things that happen in the world stage or in your individual life, they happen according to numbers. So if there's a shift, like when we go from 1999 to 2000, or, you know, any of the last 1,000 year numbers up to 1999, your numbers had all these ones in it. Then we shift over to 2000, and then there's an absence of ones, and then, you know, there's the two-ness is, T-W-O-ness is present, and consequently a great shift in consciousness is expected to emerge from that. Numerologists will tell you, first the numbers change, and then you can just watch like clockwork the, you know, reality and culture change accordingly. And so for that reason, I've been very optimistic lately with the number two being so much more present in all of our year numbers, and especially with all the, you know, children being born since 2000 with the different year numbers. This will lead to a much more peaceful, spiritual, and communal world culture, interestingly. Uh-huh. And I can see that happening all over the place. Divorce rates are going down. There's even shifts in government. It's hard to tell because governments are so pathetic and murderous, but you can even see some subtle shifts in those as well. And basically, in general, I think that we're entering into a major spiritual rebirth of some sort, not really the kind that others have focused on with 2012 and so forth, though it sort of may say, we may have sort of a catalyzing point next year, and it could even be in December of 2012, You know, things are kind of leading up to that, and I've done a lot of tarot card readings lately that seem to imply that next year is a hot point for something optimistic to happen, not something scary, and not as dramatic as, you know, the spiritual ascension or something that a lot of people talk about, which is interesting stuff, but I don't know if I have evidence that that's what's on the cards. It just seems a shift in consciousness is happening due to our numerological shift, and I think all the things, you know, there's, if your listeners agree that there's a secret world government that you can call, you know, at the ultimate highest point of it, it's called the Illuminati. And I don't even know if it's human at that level. I personally don't think it is. But if you consider that there's dramatic evidence that this group controls everything, they would be aware of this spiritual shift coming. And they would try to implant the world with bogus versions of the transformation in consciousness so people latch onto and glom onto that beforehand. And therefore, they can control the spiritual revolution and make it happen on their terms and control us as they always have since, you know, well, for thousands of years. So, but in general, aside from that negative aspect, the future I hold to be is going to look much better than the past. The past, of course, is pretty pathetic, to say the least. You know, we live in a world of poverty and war, hatred, and egotistical, despiritualized human beings. So moving, you know, I mean, we can't get a whole lot worse, but I do think we're going to get a lot better.
Yeah, I had somebody once tell me they were just freaking out, you know, and they're talking about, you know, now that the UFOs are appearing everywhere, you know, around the world, basically what they were saying was, you know, they're going to come here, they're going to invade, and, you know, and when they do, they're going to destroy the planet, and we're going to lose our freedom and everything else. And I just said, I go, where you been? You know, I said, I think all we can do is go up. You know, we can't really do much more damage to the planet, and we can't be much more controlled than we are today. So, you know, I'm not saying it's all good. I'm just saying that we don't really have much further down to go in this process.
Yeah, it's interesting how there's lots of little points of optimism that are happening, which is basically completely ignored by the quack mainstream media, who basically just gives us all kinds of fear stories. They tell us that, you know, Fukushima radiation is infecting us all, and, you know, it's in the water, it's in the air and everything. But then if you look into the issue just a little bit, we find out that the Fukushima iodine-131 actually was here beforehand. It's not even reported hardly in the mainstream media. You have to go look this up on academic websites and so forth. And that makes you wonder, is there any Fukushima radiation? I mean, we can't see it, so are we just being told a bunch of crap? And where is it coming from? And you look into it and you find out that there's hospitals dumping into the environment all the time. And it's been detected for decades, and there's all kinds of nuclear waste facilities around the country there's all kinds of lawsuits going on because there's so much iodine-131 contamination going on. But now all of a sudden we're supposed to believe that there's only one source for it, Fukushima. There's just a big game going on, and you know, and I think, you know, the internet is helping out. You know, so many people can get rational and get empirical about things, but the quack media does everything possible to just spread as much fear. But I think that people are there's it's not very I don't have much evidence for this, but my sense is that people are starting to become more intelligent than the mass media due to the shift in consciousness that I just got done referring to. It's hard to pin down specific evidence for that, but I think I can see it happening, especially. I mean, it seems to be speeding up from what I can tell.
Well, I've seen the best way to deal with this is whenever you have, you know, the politicians or the mainstream media telling you something, you can usually just reverse it completely and then multiply it by 100, and then you'll have the truth. So it's unbelievable. It's like, not to beat this. I think this is like a horse that's just getting beaten to the ground. But, you know, with Obama's birth certificate, I mean, it's almost like, to me, it's like, why focus on that when the guy has escalated all these wars? You know, he's totally destroyed the personal, you know, freedoms. You know, he hasn't done anything he agreed to do and everything else. And you know, if it is a way of you know, cleaning out the closet there, then great. But it does seem to just be another big distraction of what the big picture is. And that, you know, the big picture is much worse than not being a natural born citizen.
Yeah, it's that whole, whenever the mass media is pushing something as much as they have, you know there's some kind of trick involved, whether it's they're trying to distract so Obama can just do everything worse than George W. idiot did.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're just having fun, just playing around, because they're so in control of things that they can just do that. Hey, let's show them the most ridiculous fake birth certificate ever. It's just, doesn't it kind of remind you of the Pentagon on 9/11? I mean,
yeah.
We didn't even see a fake picture of a plane. Billions of people around the planet believe that there was one without even seeing even a fake picture, and they do the biggest slop job imaginable. I mean, there's not even any windows broken the first 15 minutes or whatever before the wall collapsed.
Uh-huh.
It kind of reminds you, they're almost just trying to tell you that, you know, hey, that we're doing this on purpose. I mean, it's like the media is creating a conspiracy movement. They want to for some reason. Because that's whether it's the moon landing or JFK assassination or 9/11 or OKC or whatever. I mean, the conspiracy theorists get their info from the mass media. It's almost as if they're creating the whole movement.
It is. Yeah, it's getting pretty insane. I know so many people, you know, they had somebody on the street, you know, walking around interviewing people, asking them about Building 7. And even news people and you know, what about Building 7 with 9/11? You know, and they go, what's Building 7? They don't even realize there was actually a third building that went down that wasn't hit by a plane and was actually claimed that it went down even before it went down on the news. So, I mean, that is just a no-brainer there. But, yeah, I guess enough people are starting to figure this out.
Yeah, I've become quite a proponent of the no planes version of 9/11. That's a strange issue because a lot of the very prominent people in conspiracy theory, some of the larger radio shows, have not only denied that that position is credible, but have furthermore said that anybody who maintains the no planes position on 9/11 is, you know, working for the CIA or is completely loony or something. But all somebody has to do is simply watch the NBC footage from 9/11, and there's not even a plane in the footage. All of a sudden, the building just blows up. And then they show the replay later, and there's a plane implanted into it. You know, so there's a lot of people say, how can we possibly have no planes on 9/11? Well, there's a couple different answers. Either you can make a fake hologram in the sky of one, or more likely, you just don't have one. I mean, do you really think, I mean, if there's somebody in New York City who was there and looking up at the sky and didn't see any planes, do you really think the mass media is going to give them an interview and say, hey, there was no plane there? And if they did, who cares? Everybody's going to just laugh at them anyways. It doesn't matter what people saw or think they saw. I was watching a video of the Space Shuttle Challenger the other day, the 1986, I think it was, disaster. Uh-huh. And I was looking at the different camera angles of the explosion, and I said, you know, this thing doesn't even look real. I mean, I don't know what people think they saw or didn't see when they saw an explosion there or something. But you look at the video footage, and there's two different, right when the explosion happens, the video footage changes from one angle to the other, and it looks like two completely different explosions are happening. All the little, you know, feeder things popping out of the explosion and don't even match up. So, I mean, it's very difficult to tell what is real and not real in this crazy, insane, you know, fabricated culture we live in. I mean, conspiracy theory, you know, all the conspiracy theorists out there are thinking that they're creating the movement and they're fighting for freedom. No, they're not. They're just working for the Illuminati, who is deliberately creating them through the mass media, showing them little snippets and hints, showing them where to go, and they create this fervor of a conspiracy movement. What all of us need to do is just turn it off, ignore their economic system, start our own small businesses, create our own crops, create medical marijuana, create superconductivity, solar panels, everything we need, book publishing companies, on small scales, and just run this economy ourselves. And if they say, oh, the economy's collapsing, we'll say, no, it's not, because we're running it with our small businesses. We don't care what your money, your Federal Reserve, any of it's all about, because it doesn't affect us anymore.
Yeah, it's basically what I see is that whole interest game is just enslave the masses to where it's hit epidemic levels where there's no way out. and just, I don't think we have enough forests to print enough money to cover these interests. You know, and to me, at what point, having all these digital numbers and little green pieces of paper, you know, or gold, at what point do you exact self-worth? I mean, how much is it going to take before you go, hey, I'm a cool guy, or I'm a nice guy, or whatever? How much money do you need, you know, before you get some type of self-esteem going? And it's just gotten so ridiculous. It is insane. I can't think of anything else to call it.
Well, James, can you imagine the power? If you not only, I mean, you had so much money that you could, you know, you could buy up parts of countries. And furthermore, if you needed more, you just change the digits in the Federal Reserve's computer or your own bank account computer to whatever you want. You've got enough money that the power aspect of it doesn't even really matter anymore. It's just irrelevant because you've had that and you've got that. And so, I mean, there has to be like another step to this whole money sorcery that they have going on. Because it's, I mean, the power aspect seems to be interesting, but it seems to be more of a magical aspect with all their crazy symbols on the dollar and all their little money rituals that they have going on with, you know, who knows if all the stuff in the Federal Reserve and so forth. So, I mean, it's just, it's a different sort of mental state one has to be in to understand exactly what the, you know, the banksters and the people who run them are all about. I don't think the banksters and the Illuminati are the same thing. I know a lot of times people do, but I think there's evidence that it goes higher up. There's supernatural technologies around the planet that are sort of floating around that people are, you know, scratching their heads over. But if there's super, like an example of a supernatural technology is one that can interact with consciousness. Since consciousness can't be found in an encephalogram reading or an MRI, we have to assume that the best evidence shows that consciousness is non-physical. Because I can't open up your brain, James, and find consciousness in it. I can just find neurons and so forth. I don't find love or the thought 2 + 2 = 4. A lot of supernatural technology interacts with it. Well, there's all kinds of supernatural technologies all over the planet. So that would imply that whoever's at the top of this, you know, the ultimate power behind the throne, the Illuminati structure, has supernatural technology at hand. And that would imply that they are supernatural beings themselves, something like what's written in Genesis 6 about the Nephilim or something like that.
Yeah. Here's the way I see it, and this is kind of interesting. Just observing this for quite some time is that as you move up the ladder of power, whatever you want to call it, it just gets darker and darker and darker. And, you know, this might sound crazy, but, you know, somebody will come in, like a politician, let's say, and, you know, he'll want to be famous and get notoriety and gain some wealth. And, you know, and they get in there, and some of them went in there with the good idea, you know, saying, hey, you know, I want to make a change. I really want to serve the people or whatever. And they get in there, and those people find out their hands are totally tied. And if they don't do what they're told, they're gotten rid of, you know, either they're, you know, character assassinated or physically assassinated or whatever. They're just taken out or not given, you know, any kind of a voice in the mainstream media. So they're out. So the other guys that are playing the game, they have to basically sell their souls, and they have to do a lot of manipulating, a lot of lying, a lot of deceiving. And each time they do that, they lose their soul. They lose their God connection, whatever you want to call it. And it gets darker and darker and darker until soon there's nobody home. And who have they given their power to? This network, or this whatever you want to call it, this consciousness that is very dark, you know, very negative. And it seems to feed on human suffering. And it has no care whatsoever for humanity or the earth or your family or anything else. It's just, and on one level, it's just looking at pure profit, you know, pure profits, the mega corporations. And we just want to control, dominate, and make as much money as we can, and the hell with the planet and the people. But I think there's something beyond that is very, very dark. And some people say demonic, you know, some people call it reptilian. Everybody has these different names for it, but obviously it has no consciousness whatsoever or no love for humanity and the earth. And as a matter of fact, it seems to have a great disdain for both. And you can just see in the way the way it's operating right now. I mean, we've got all these nuclear reactors, you know, doing the meltdown thing. Some getting ready for the meltdown. They build them on fault lines. You know, you've got chemtrails, and that's another thing. They're finding strontium in the chemtrails. So we're already getting nuked by the chemtrails. And you know, I can go on, and then all the food additives and the fluoride in the water and the aspartame and, the, you know, everything. You can go on, and you go, God, this is pure genocide on the highest levels that is at play here.
Yeah, I've with some friends of mine, we've done a lot of work on a concept we call dark ecstasy.
Yeah,
and this is basically is very detailed topic, which is gained a lot of people have found this pretty interesting. And it basically, let me sum it up in one sentence, if I can. The definition of evil is not people's actions or so forth. What it is a force that seems to only encompass planet Earth and not the rest of the cosmos. And it seems to come from a set of satanic beings, call them the Nephilim, or I've called them the Horned Gods at different times. And a lot of, you can find traces of their existence and, you know, through various Illuminati operations and so forth. They seem to exist non-physically, encompassing our planet, and it doesn't appear that they can possess humans by possession, probably because humans are created in God's image, and you can verify that through some Buddhist meditation, and you'll quickly find that you're an incredibly spiritually charged human entity is what you are. So an evil entity wouldn't be able to grab control of you. They have to do it through other ways. They have to trick you. They have to get you to exist in an egotistical state of consciousness, your personality consciousness, that is, fear and desire consciousness. They have to use a mass media, you know, very low-tech operation, really, to try to persuade, you know, sort of hijack your thoughts and create your consciousness in ways, create your selfhood. And so basically what they have is what they are is consciousness, just like we are. What we are is consciousness. Forget your body. It's verifiable that you can scientifically verify that your consciousness extends out beyond your body, interacts with other consciousnesses. So there's this field of consciousness that's everywhere, and all humans have it interacting with each other at all times. It's like this innate telepathy that we have. Now there's these dark beings that exist also, which are consciousness as well, and what they want to do is tap into a horrified state of the field of consciousness that humans exhibit. So they have to create a world of fear and deformity. You know, something, the best example is Hurricane Katrina. You know, the silly little humans swimming in the water. Ha ha. You know, I mean, it's a carnival. They called it a laboratory, or they call the Iraq War a theater. It's funny. It's comical for them. They watch and those triangular Phoenix Lights type spaceships from the sky over the, you know, the Iraq War, watching their theater that they tell you is a theater that they've created. They do this for satisfaction. It's all of you listening know that there have been times where you saw a football hit, which was, if you think back on the football game you watched, it was the most exciting time of the game when you saw that monster hit where one player just crushes the other. You were more titillated by that than you were, for example, by, you know, the winning football score or something. And that's kind of curious. We have this darkness in us for some reason that it's almost like it's been implanted there for reasons too lengthy to explain right here. But the overall point I want to make about dark ecstasy is it appears that the point of the world, I mean, they're in control. The Illuminati's in control. Oh, yeah. They don't need to, you know, create the New World Order or something. It's been here for thousands of years. They're just, they just change its structure. You know, hey, let's have the New World Order with this country, communism, now this other one, capitalism. Now let's flip it. You know, it's just a game of ritual and death and sacrifice. So you have to ask, why is it? And the answer is because they want to create a field of consciousness filled with terror, because they tap into this. If it's a field that's out there, then they can tap into it with their consciousnesses as well and get high off of it. What do I mean by get high off of it? Well, you have to go study serial killers as one example, or sadomasochistic rituals as another example. These things generate almost physiological euphoria. You can find all kinds of cases of serial killers where when they're doing their dissection rituals or something, they'll later report that those things gave them a high for some reason. You know, the Charles Manson lifestyle is a dark euphoria. The same with sadomasochism. Those the pain and when you sort of transcend, you know, if I pinch myself with my hand as I'm doing right now, if I stare right into the pain, James, rather than look the other way, if I look right into it, feel it as deeply as I can, it doesn't matter how much I intensify that pinching of my skin of my arm right here, it won't hurt if I'm looking directly into the pain. So there's a way to go beyond pain, and that is what sadomasochistic rituals involve. And to go beyond pain in the dark sense of sadomasochism is to achieve this state of dark ecstasy. It's similar to the serial killer's ritual. So this is in us, and for some reason the world is structured to get us all to take part in sort of large-scale or microcosmic-scale rituals of this sort of the serial killer, whether it's war or taking part in some stupid TV show or and so forth. So they create this consciousness of terror so they can achieve euphoria off it the same way that one would achieve euphoria in a sadomasochistic ritual. That's how do I know all this stuff? This is where I come from. I slipped in. This is what true Satanism is. We call it dark ecstasy. It's a murder trance. It's a murder high. And people fall into it all the time. And I did in the 1990s and then I got out of it in the late 1990s. And then ever since I've been trying to figure out what in the world happened to me then. That was pretty bizarre and crazy. And this is my answer. And if you want to understand the way, like I've got a DVD for sale on my website, zenflowerradio.com. Called Dark Ecstasy, which explains this. And basically the subtitle of the film is this is the way, you know, the real reason the world is the way it is. You can't understand it through, you know, understand the world through power, money, and struggles and all this kind of stuff. The only way it makes any sense, you know, why is there false flag attacks? Why does the Illuminati system use that? I mean, false flags are much more prevalent than we realize. They almost encompass our daily life, like cancer threats. On the TV news, those are false flag attacks because cancer is not really a threat. Okay, all anybody needs to do is just go get some medical cannabis, and there is no cancer threat. Okay, all you need to do is just practice alternative medicine, get your immune system strong, and there is no cancer threat. So, telling someone there's a threat of cancer, an incurable disease, is a false flag attack. There's two types of false flag attacks: the real ones where something happens, or ones you're just told about as a threat somewhere. You know, like North Korea, where nothing's really happened that's overtly affecting your life at this point. So, I mean, it really our psychology is structured by the false flag mentality in various forms. So, you know, you wonder, why do it this way? And the only way you can make sense out of any of these deep mechanics of exploring the Illuminati system that we're all stuck in is this concept of dark ecstasy. They're trying to create this terror field so they can have their sadomasochistic euphoria in, you know, whatever dimension they're existing in all around us.
Yeah, there's another... You know, I'd like to talk about solutions on how do you get yourself out of here, but I want to explore this a little deeper. What I've seen in my own experience, and we do a lot of counseling here, is when somebody is suicidal, they're getting ready to kill themselves or whatever, they usually have multiple entities attached to them. It's the human drive to live and is so strong that it's really hard to commit suicide without having some intense pressures on you, or you might say a dark cheerleading team, you know, in the next levels. And I've always wondered, like, maybe some of this dark euphoria are these beings coming in and you feeling their power and their energy, and they're getting their hit vicariously off this situation, whatever it is, whatever violence or pain or suffering is triggered by this, and maybe a combination of things happening that is why this the top of the Illuminati are these type of beings that are actually feeding, you know, on this energy or whatever this dark ecstasy that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's the only way I can make any sense out of the world. And again, to emphasize, when I was stuck in this in the 1990s, I mean, I've got a theory as to why it happens. and I know a lot of this can't be verified by a lot of your listeners, and you'll just have to take my word for it. And that's, if you doubt what I'm saying, I think, you know, that's good. I would too, perhaps. I mean, but I'm just trying to re, you know, I try to put it in empirical terms as best I can, but it's difficult. But the idea is, if you are a human, here's what I think happens, why a person falls into dark ecstasy. You know, real overt dark ecstasy. If you're a deep and meditative sort of person, and you're surrounded by nature, your consciousness will spontaneously interact with your surroundings to create true God-centered ecstasy. The best example of that is found in, say, is Zen Buddhism, for example, where they have all kinds of tales about how a Zen monk was walking through the forest and saw a flower, and it just shocked their consciousness into the pure joy, to put it crudely, of nirvana. Or there's other, you know, sermons in Zen Buddhism about how the head monk was about to give a sermon to the monks, and just as about he was ready to open his mouth, a bird sang, and he says, and he stopped, and he said, "The sermon has been spoken," and, you know, half the monks achieve enlightenment at that point. So the point is, the environment interacts with the consciousness to create the elevated consciousness. Now, this can backfire. Okay, the key there is you're operating in nature. Now, this can backfire if you're not in nature. Nature is psychedelic. Okay, all these crazy forms and flowers and fractal structures and trees and waterfalls and everywhere. It's just a psychedelic, you know, explosion everywhere. Not by accident. So is your consciousness. Your consciousness is structured the exact same way as psychedelic. Go explore it tonight. Sit in the closet for 3 hours and meditate, and you'll see what I mean. But now, if you're stuck in civilization and you're taken out of the psychedelia of ecstatic nature, then this will backfire. And if you're a deep and meditative person, you're going to achieve spiritual highs, but they're going to be, it's going to backfire, and it's going to be of this dark ecstatic form of spirituality that we're sitting here discussing. That's the only reason I can find for why I fell into this back in the 1990s when I lived in New Mexico. And there's also things you might say, well, every person is spiritual to some degree, and most of us are stuck in civilization, so therefore, are all of us dark ecstatics to some degree? And the answer to that is a huge yes. And you can see that in our culture. I mean, we sit back and support war, and this our incredible apathy and our little spitefulness and our taste for violence and spitefulness. Even just look at a little conversation between people. Just watch how people talk to each other. Little put-downs that they throw back and forth each other. Little competition games. Little struggles to see who can say the better thing and be more impressive and so forth. I mean, culture is completely pathetic. We're completely despiritualized to the nth degree. So now the point is, it's just a small trigger further to get someone to exhibit their dark ecstasy that the typical person have as they are a denizen of civilization. And that will be seen in little things, how somebody is titillated by the traffic accident, as a lot of us have talked about, or the incredible euphoria somebody gets off the monster hockey hit or something. You watch the crowd. You go watch them with your eyes. Watch after a goal is scored, or as it's happening, even the winning goal, and watch as the monster hockey happens, and you will see the crowd is more fired up and wild-eyed over the monster hit than they are over the goal. Now, even if you're an evolutionist, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, I'm not an evolutionist, but if you believe that God created nature, or if you're an evolutionist or some other third version, none of this makes really any sense. If it did, why don't other animals exhibit, you know, this frenzy of euphoria when their fellow animals get torn to pieces or something? You know, I mean, even chimpanzees, who are astonishingly similar to humans, as Jane Goodall wrote in her book, Through a Window, I think it's called, the name of the book. I haven't read it in a dozen years. But she talks about how monkeys seem to have little religious experiences, and they have little art projects, and they're astonishingly more human. They're almost like little 3 or 4 year old children to a degree. Uh-huh. And you know, and when you teach a monkey sign language, it's their sign language kind of sounds like a little 3 or 4 year old as well. But you know, so the point here is why don't they have all these dark ecstatic tendencies that humans do? And you simply don't see this in nature. You see survival activities, not dark ecstatic. Anyways, I can go on for 3 hours this whole dark ecstasy topic. But the point is it's a real force surrounded by distorted consciousness that has infected humans globally. Most people just live with it and don't understand their despiritualized state and think that this is just normal, little spiteful, hateful nature, and how we get, you know, titillated off these stupid movies and everything that we do. But it can tip over into all-out dark ecstasy, as serial killers have this. A lot of soldiers that go to war come back and their minds are warped, and sort of have murderous fantasies and the sadomasochistic rituals that are much more popular in culture than the average person understands. So the signs, you know, video, even video games, the whole deal.
Yeah. It's pretty. I can't even watch that stuff. I mean, it affects my physical body to even watch it. And I just go, I got to get out of here. You know, it's like, but you know, I live in a pristine environment out in nature and spend a lot of time meditating in nature and get that other hit. And I think when you live in that environment and then you walk into social consciousness and you see the program there, even the spiritual program there, it's not really spiritual. It's just, you know, they have all the buzzwords and they say all the right things and everything else, but it's just another form of manipulation.
Yeah, I'll admit something here. I've had a lot of trouble. I've never admitted this on radio, and if any of my listeners are listening, I'm just gonna, you'll be surprised by this, but hey, I'm just gonna say it. I mean, I've struggled with dark ecstasy. I mean, it's an addiction, a real wild-eyed fascination that when you get a taste of it, it's hard to really relinquish it. And, you know, through the years, I've, you know, gotten closer and closer to God and so forth to get rid of it. But I've had trouble, even up to, you know, recent weeks, with relinquishing it completely. It's hard. Anyway, so the point I'm trying to bring up here is that I've become a medical marijuana patient in the last couple of weeks for a very, very serious migraine headache issue that I have that pops up. You know, 1 year I'll have it, 1 year I won't, 1 year I'll have it again, 1 year I won't. And nothing would cure, so I become a medical marijuana patient. And obviously, cannabis is—it seems to be an intelligently designed wonder plant. And I will tell you this, James: this has shocked me to the core. When I started cannabis a while back, my every single trace of dark ecstasy that I was struggling with completely vanished. And I don't really understand. Obviously, there's something big to this, and I know a lot of your callers are. I'm sorry, all your listeners are trying to just figure out what we're talking about if you've never heard this ecstasy topic before and so forth, but maybe you have to go back and re-listen or whatever, but that's pretty shocking. You know, I mean, alternative medicine and, you know, the psychedelic nature that we've been placed inside of is way more powerful than the average person understands. I got whooping cough last year, and which that was scary. Okay, my wife was pregnant. You don't want to have whooping cough when your wife's about to give birth. You don't want the baby to get it. I had my 7-year-old who was 6 years old at the time she had it, and I discovered mullein leaf. Well, actually, I knew about it before, but I started smoking it quite. It's like a lung medicine directly.
Yes. Yeah.
It had weird kind of interactions with my consciousness. It's almost like the plant was interacting with my consciousness. It was more than just, oh, it's been 3 hours, I need to smoke mullein leaf now. No, it was more like my consciousness was responding in a way unexpected to. It's like alternative medicine. It works at the consciousness level, as I'm sure you probably know better than me. And, you know, there's a lot of amazing things. I mean, there's a lot of power in nature. And it's just amazing how much everybody just missed it.
Yeah, we have. I used to have this old Native American guy I used to hike around in the mountains with, and he pointed down at mullein once, and he says, "That's the most important herb in the forest." And I said, "Really?" I go, "What's it for?" And he said, "Toilet paper." You know, so
Hey, that'd be a good, nice and soft. Yeah,
yeah, it's a big, soft, fuzzy leaf. You know, so you know, but yeah, they do smoke it. You know, they do put it in with their tobacco, and it does.
It's wonderful to smoke. It's really good fermentation.
Yeah, very clears the lungs out. You know, it's kind of interesting. But going back to this other subject, what we've been experiencing here is that there's two things going on. You know, one is that we're going through a tremendous rebirth, moving into a new place in the universe that's extremely highly charged. And just, you know, I really feel that something really awesome is going to come out of this. It's a process, but during this process, it's like they talk about in the ancient Vedic, you know, scriptures and things. They said the closer you get to nirvana, the more the demons rear their ugly heads. So we're starting to see some pretty nasty characters pop up that are some of the most controlling manipulating beings, and they are good at it. I mean, they know every little flaw. They know every little fear. They know every little program, every little pattern that's happened to you, and they know how to use it. It's amazing to create more of this dark ecstasy or more of this dissension or more of this. And it is, I mean, you've got to really be on top of it to decipher what are your emotions and attitudes and energies and what theirs are. I mean, it's been surfacing incredibly on a grand scale, you might say, right now.
Yeah, it's the rebirth that I think a lot of the things that people are worried about and so forth happening, part of me thinks that they're not going to happen. I mean, you think about Operation Northwoods, James. I mean, everybody makes a big deal out of that. You know, that document from the 60s that said mm-hmm. it was a government plan to blow up planes in a fake way. And
oh, yeah.
Cuba did it, blah, blah, blah. The most interesting thing about that is that it never happened.
Yeah. Know,
it was a plan drawn up. I mean, think about Codex Alimentarius, and I know that it's still, you know, clamping down more and more. But the point is it was supposed to be implemented a long time ago. And to my knowledge, the average person I see is much, 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 much more into alternative medicine or good food or veganism or anything than they were just a few years, 2 years ago. I mean, people that I know that would laugh at me for being a vegan or you know, smoking mullein leaf or anything now are, oh, hey, tell me about it. What's a good book? You know, they're completely interested in it. So, you know, so you got to think, you know, there's more farming going on all over the place. So I think a lot of the things that people fear, I think the things that we should fear are the things that are actually going on, like eugenics right now. I mean, cancer treatment is a form of eugenics. You know,
obesity
is a form of eugenics. I mean, they're, you know, saying, just telling people on the TV that there's an overpopulation problem is, when I can drive to Michigan to my my cabin I have up north, I mean, there's just miles and miles, trees, land everywhere, lakes and water, and, you know, so what's the overpopulation problem? You know, maybe the overpopulation problem is people not living the right way and they're, you know, cramped cities and so forth. So anyway, the point is it's amazing all the things that don't happen. And if I think, you know, of all the things in the Patriot Act and the Military Commissions Act and that politicians have said they're going to do and wrangle and stupid congressmen and all, you know, all this stuff. I mean, it's, I would say about 1% of it ever materializes. Now, that's pretty interesting. It shows two things. One, there's a threat. And two, that the lack of threat is stronger than the threat that exists. You know, so there is the threat. Yeah. But then again, on the other hand, the lack of threat is stronger. I mean, I can still do whatever I want. I own 20 guns. They're all sitting right behind me right now here. And I mean, that's definitely an emblem of freedom, you know, right there. Yeah. I mean, I can farm right outside my door here. Mm-hmm. There's fresh water I can catch to drink. And I can say whatever I want here on the radio. I can create my own radio show. So, I mean, this is still pretty astonishing. I mean, so, yeah, I know that things are rough and poverty is on the rise and so forth. But, you know, maybe it's good, James, that the civilization is falling apart, because the civilization is what's called the New World Order, which I think stinks and I hate it. And so maybe you still want to talk about solutions. Well, here's the solution. Let all the big corporations go to China. Oh, are we actually going to be sad that they're leaving? How can anybody be sad that they're leaving? I mean, they're the ones that they're what's imprisoning us. I mean, go study all the people out in California who are making a fortune off medical cannabis, and they're all just like mom and pop. You know, oh, I was going to lose my house to a mortgage nightmare, and I started growing cannabis, and my problems are over, and I've got a lot of money saved up here. I mean, that's what every single one of, if there's only one solution, James, and it's that. Start a business, find out something you like to do, find out what you like to do more than anything, and start a business. If you like to make soap, start a business. If you like to write books like I do, start a business. And I've made a ton of money off my books. I almost live off sales of my books last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if you like to make videos, if you like to farm, grow carrots, find something you like to do. And start slow. Don't expect to make a fortune and be able to quit your job in 3 weeks or next year or something, but just get started. Maybe in 10 years, it'll be so big that you'll be able to quit your job. There's a friend of ours that we have. Her name is Veronica Vroom. She is she owns the Pure Bars. They used to be called the Vroom Bars. And she just started those because she was anti-vaccine and blah, blah, blah. And her, she wanted fresh, good food, granola bars for her kids, so she started making them. And then friends of hers started saying, hey, can you make me some of those? I would really love to get my kids. And then she got such a demand that, you know, friends of friends were saying, well, I'll pay you for them. And it turned into a business, and then it got really huge, and they were all over stores in Michigan. And then last month she was featured in O Magazine, and she's got so much business now she almost went under because there's so much demand. I mean, that's the point. If you want to defeat the New World Order system, you have to take over the economic system. And the only way to do that is every single one of you right now, either yourself or with a couple of friends, need to start a business. Do you like to make biodiesel? Well, then start doing it. Do you like to – are you interested in superconductivity or solar panels? Start making apparatuses for those. I mean, solar panels are so cheap to make, and the prices that you find online are just almost comical. You know, yeah. Do you like organic food? Speaking of comical prices, Whole Foods – I mean, here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, there's a Trader Joe's and three Whole Foods. And the Whole Foods prices are literally double Trader Joe's. And it's the same stuff. It's the same food. And you think, wait a minute, so that's price gouging. And then you find out Whole Foods is under investigation for a monopolism and so forth by the corrupt government, which is kind of funny that the whole thing's a joke. So, I mean, the point is you can grow organic food and absolutely destroy a company. I mean, the competition... You don't have any competition. Nobody else is doing it, and everybody's going to Whole Foods here in Ann Arbor, which is the mecca for organic, healthy food. I mean, you would have so much demand almost overnight that you could make a fortune. So, I mean, that's what everybody needs to do. You want to defeat the New World Order system, the Illuminati, and live free? Start a business now. And the point is you might think, well, what if it doesn't work? Well, hey, here's the plus side. If it works, you can get out of your job now, you can do what you love, and you can make a ton of money. Skip this... You know, people often are giving me such a guilt trip. Jeff, why do you sell your books? Why do you sell DVDs? Well, what am I supposed to do? Want to be poor? You know, that doesn't help anybody. Poverty is where people don't have power. Their crime rates increase, disease, illiteracy, the whole deal. We need to all be wealthy. I mean, when you go to a stock market to buy your junk, I mean, you buy it from a cashier who makes, $3 an hour, so to speak, and then you're at your stupid job making hardly any money. You're exchanging money for a product that has a 95% markup, and the person not doing work off in some skyscraper gets all the profit. We need to change that now. We need to buy and sell directly from each other, where we take all the profit and get filthy rich, and where everybody's rich. And if you have a sea level, if you've got a boat, boats in a harbor. If the sea level goes up, all the boats go up. That's what we need. We need everybody rich, everybody wealthy. So there's no bad side of town where people are, those are the people who are filled with crime. No, we want everybody to be. There is no bad side of town. We're all in the good side of town. We all are wealthy and happy.
I agree 100%. Going back to that one thing you were saying, it seems like people have this concept that if you're spiritual, you don't have electric bills and you don't have tax bills and you don't have food bills, you don't have, all these bills that everybody else has because you're spiritual and God provides everything for you, And so therefore you should not charge for anything. And I get that all the time and I go, what is wrong with you? Being self-reliant is spiritual, not being dependent on everybody else is spiritual. And it comes with, part of the, awakening process, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe that people criticize me for starting a business to sell my stuff, which are all my products are for sale on zenflowerradio.com. And I mean, so if I don't do that, then my only alternative is to go work for, McDonald's or something. And, so that's, I'm supposed to be a slave to the New World Order system instead of empowering myself. Now, does that make any, lack of thought, let's just be honest. I mean, I'll say it, you don't have to. The average person in the conspiracy movement is a complete moron who hasn't thought things through enough. And you can get as mad as you want for that. I don't care. Hate me, send me hate mail, I don't care. We need to hit rock bottom, realize how pathetic we are, realize that we've done absolutely nothing to change this world. We can't even stop Obama from invading Libya in an anti-war time. The mass of Americans didn't even want it. Invasion, they still going, we can't do anything, we're powerless. We need to figure out right now how pathetic and clueless and non-powerful we are, and maybe then we'll hit rock bottom and say, okay, we're a joke, what do we really need to do? And maybe we'll get sober at that point.
Yeah, definitely. It seems like the average Joe out there, to me, it's like I've always had this concept, of this base little program, where it says, thou shalt not kill. And And what I don't know what it is about that statement that people don't understand. And they're still running the old wrathful God program out of the Bible where, you know, I guess God went and killed anybody that didn't worship him and fall down on their knees. So it's okay for us to do it. And it's a very holy thing. Well, it isn't, you know, and it wasn't back then either. That's a whole nother subject, which we could get into. But, you know, the bottom line is that these other people are families. They have children. They have wives. They have jobs. They have farms. You know, they're just like us. That yeah, they speak a different language. They have a different culture. But the bottom line is that we've got to drop this separation game and this dehumanizing, demonizing program that these mega corporations are running, and just not participate anymore. That's the only way we can stop this nonsense, is to just refuse to participate on any level.
Yeah, and then we have to realize if we refuse to participate, well, then you've got to figure out where your food's going to... I mean, to really not participate is means you don't go to the post office. You don't go to the grocery store. You don't have internet. So now I know a lot of us are going to want to have mail, food, and mass communication. So we're going to have to, we can't do this in 5 minutes. We can't do this in 1 year. We may not even be able to do this in 10 years. We may have to set a goal like between 10 and 20 years. We're going to have a completely new society where we said we're not going to cooperate at all with the mass monopolists, which are, you know, called the New World Order system. We're going to set up our own system. So it's going to take a lot of time. We'll give ourselves the time, and everybody starts to take over the economy right now. And the only way to do that again is to start your own business right now. Because if you don't, you're working for, if you don't do that, you're going to work for some other corporation where they're going to pay taxes and operate according to the New World Order system. So you have no choice but to set it up yourself, the economic system. You have to hijack it. Really, it's they hijacked it from us. They hijacked our souls. We need to take them back. So if we're going to refuse all of, you know, if we're going to have complete non-cooperation, we have to realize that, okay, we need to find a place where our food and everything is going to come from. And that's why we need to start. The first step is something that hardly anybody ever talks about, is starting new economic systems right now.
Mm-hmm. I think you still operate within the existing system, but just set boundaries with certain areas and say, no, I'm not going to support this. I'm not going to support, you know, and just keep setting boundaries, maybe smaller boundaries, and get up to the bigger boundaries later. But, you know, there's just certain things we need to just say no to, and that's maybe going over and blowing up other. We could just start up, you know, we're not going to go blow other countries up, you know, and steal their resources. That might be a good first step, you know.
So. Yeah, it's got to be I totally agree that it has to be gradual.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, people are talking about those have a strike on April 15th. Yeah, I mean, they've been talking about that since the 90s, and it never works. Yeah. I mean, don't you figure out after 15 years it has absolutely no effect, that maybe it doesn't work, we should do something else? And even if we could get the whole country to do it, I mean, James, what good is it going to do? The whole country just starts going again on the 16th or 18th or whatever when the strike's over, and everybody just goes and buys gas and poisonous food and the same thing over again. So, yeah, that did a lot of good.
Well, I think nature is going to go on strike here real shortly, and we're going to have some big issues to deal with. And you know, I think that's about the only thing left. You know, the last toll card is nature. And I just think that there's definitely a reaction to all the actions we've taken and what we've done. And I think we're seeing that coming to the surface just with this huge influx. But, you know, unfortunately, we're out of time. I know I wanted to get further into more of the clearing and the healing process, but we don't have time. We'll have to bring you back on the show. But before we go, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
Oh, they can email me at zenflowerradio@hotmail.com, or just go to my website, Zenflower, that's Z-E-N, zenflowerradio.com. Any of my radio shows can be found through that site, especially through the feed link at the top right. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the best way.
Great. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
Maybe we'll get on the show again and really move into some solutions on the next go around.
Sounds great.
All right. Well, folks, that's it. We're out of time. I can't thank you enough for listening to the show. And, you know, keep watching the skies, because there's a lot going on, not just with the UFO activity, but with the solar system and the solar storms coming in and everything else. I mean, we are definitely moving through some exciting times. And just be aware, these are going to affect your bioelectric fields around your body, and you'll have times where you're just going to have to lay down and cruise through this. So, you know, the main thing is just be kind to yourself through these times and be kind to others. Anyway, this is James Gillen signing off. Have a great evening. Good night.